Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Unbound and Rewound Horror Podcast, where we dive deeper into every book and movie for a closer look at their bone-chilling anatomy. I am Avery, your queerfully fearfully host. Make sure you're following me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Substack at Your Horror Podcast for the latest horror content and podcast updates, such as what to expect for every new episode. We are continuing the celebration of women. It is Women's History Month, after all, with a woman filmmaker that I've personally had the pleasure of working with, and it's that project that has brought us here today. So I will go ahead and let you introduce yourself to the people.
Hi, I'm Audrey E. Lorber. I'm a Brooklyn filmmaker by trade. and it's such a thrill. Thank you so much for having me. Also, wow, I can't believe you do that intro every time. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I have to. It's like a trademark at this point. Like,
I thought it might be pre-recorded. That's how good it is.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Well, now my ego is even bigger. Thank you so much. As you all know, listeners, every time we have a guest on here, we have to get to know them more for just what we're actually here to talk about. Everyone I have on this podcast has encountered horror to some degree. Most people are huge, huge fans, though I have had some people who are not big fans of horror, and it's the dynamic that is important. But today we are here with someone who does love horror, and that is why we are friends. We go to horror trivia all the time together. I say that, but we've only been twice, but we will be going more. So to get things started, if you're a reader, what are you reading? But you are a watcher, so what are you currently watching?
Listen, Avery, you know, you know I don't really read. I try. I know how to. So that's a good step. But I want to get into reading more. But I have watched something that I'm actually excited to talk to you about. I don't know if you'll like it, because it's quite funny. I feel like we have different opinions.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like some things we agree so we're so in sync, and then others, like, night and day. So it's kind of fun talking, I feel like. I just watched, have you seen Be My Cat, a film for Anne?
No, that sounds so niche though.
Right? Yeah, it's very in line with the trivia that we fail at every
month.
But it's so weird. It's this like meta found footage, I think it's Romanian movie, and it's free on like the Roku channel, and I actually watched it on YouTube, so that like created an extra surreal experience, because it's like he's kind of vlogging the whole movie. It's so wild. I don't know if you'd like it. It's like very weird, but I really liked it. Just like because of how meta it was, because it's all about him like filming a documentary about a movie he wants to make with Anne Hathaway. But it's like, it's so...
Oh my gosh, I have heard of this, like vaguely. But yeah, I have heard about how weird it is. But like, it being... I love meta stuff. And that's the thing. Like, I enjoy meta movies, so...
It's literally on YouTube. And I feel like when a movie is on YouTube, that makes my life a million times easier, and I feel like I would watch that movie so much faster. And I watched it because I want to write something for the found footage monthly macabre night tide. But yeah, it was so weird. It was so low budget. It was like, and I feel like that's what you want, I guess, out of a found footage movie. It's like when you see a blockbuster like found footage movie that was like expensive to make, it's like, wow, right?
Yeah, you can always tell, like, and I think that's one of my problems with found footage. Like, I'm not the biggest found footage fan, And I can't even really tell you why, but I really liked Lake Mungo as a found footage movie. I thought that was really cool because it's also a mockumentary at the same time. But like the way that like, and I, we talked about this, Skinamarink. I think this is one of those where we don't align. But like with Skinamarink, it feels so like real and gritty, and if I'm gonna have a found footage movie of some sort, like I need it to feel like I just put in the VHS and I'm watching like I just found it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I think like that's one of the reasons why I don't like the Paranormal Activity movies either, because it's just like after a while, I don't know, there's only so much you can do. But I might have to check it out. This is like, because it's so niche, mm-hmm. and considering this is the at least second time that I've heard about it, I'm taking it as a sign and I'm adding it to my watch list.
Yeah, no, definitely do it. What are you watching? Are you watching or reading anything?
Actually, yes. I am reading, I don't think I have it next to me right now, but I'm reading Horror Movie by Paul Tremblay. Every single episode I just mess up his last name, but it's the one that I was telling you and Bailey about, where it's like half of it is like a screenplay and half of it is actual like exposition, and I'm almost done with it actually. It's very interesting. It's essentially like, you know how there's those cursed films, like something happened on set and it's like a cursed film and then it gains this cult following, and it's kind of like that. So it's very fun. That's what I'm reading. But watching, I had a screener for Late Night with the Devil.
I want to watch that so badly.
I just watched that today, actually, while I was working. And it was really good. Like, I enjoyed it. The lead actor, who I can't think of his name right now, but first of all, he is in his bag this past year because he was in The Boogeyman. He was in Last Voyage of Demeter, and now he's the lead of Late Night with the Devil. It does have, it's something about Shudder movies. There's like a quality to them that's like, yeah, this is a Shudder movie. And that's not like a bad quality, but it's just like, this is something that Shudder would choose to represent. But the 70s aspect to it, the late night talk show, the like, which is on theme for what we're talking about today, but like the desire to like be successful as a late night talk show host and have this, all of this competition, like it was a really good movie, and I can't wait for more people to see it, to be honest. But yeah, that's what I recently watched. And I also watched, have you heard of The Puppet Man on Shudder?
Oh, yes. I wanted to watch this simply because I saw the cover art and I was like, oh my God, this is...
You're the one who posted it. Yes. Yeah, because you posted it.
I follow Shudder, I guess, on Instagram. Yeah. So I get like all... Anytime like they have a featured movie, it's like, oh, perfect. Got to go to the featured section and check the updates, instead of the like Halloween Yule log that for some reason is up all year round, which makes all me laugh year. So much. Yeah. but yeah, I want to see that, but I haven't seen that. You recommend?
Yeah, it was just a random choice on my part because I watched that and I watched Shudder for today's episode. So that was just a random choice that I was like, it's a newish movie. And I remembered seeing someone, which was you, post about it. And I was like, I'll give it a try. And it was good. Like, yeah, I would say I haven't rated it yet, but I would say I give it 3.5.
Oh, that's good.
Solid 3.5.
Wow. Yeah,
because that I feel like the concept was pretty original considering we're in this like era of remakes and live action, you know, whatever. I thought the concept was really, it was really good. And the acting was not bad. It does have someone who used to be a TikTok influencer in there, but he was okay. He was pretty good. So yeah, I recommend, definitely check it out.
Speaking of Shudder, have you seen When Evil Lurks yet?
I was talking, talking about this with Zero and Sheree, because I haven't, but it's just because it is a movie that you have to sit down and like, because subtitles, you have to sit down and watch it. And every time I'm like binging movies, it's because I'm working. So I'm watching stuff that I can listen to and periodically look at. And I haven't just sat down and zoned into a movie. I actually thought about watching it this weekend, but
it's so good.
I chose something else. I don't remember. But I do. I do need to watch it.
It's
like
terrifying. So like I will say that. Like if you're afraid, then that's a good reason. But no. I watched it like as soon as it went on Shudder, and I hadn't heard anything about it. Yeah. And but I know that it has gotten a lot of hype. Yes. Since I've seen a lot of podcasters. I've listened to a lot of podcasters talk about it at this point. But yeah, it's so good, so scary in the ways that I think scary movies scare me, and like
yeah.
In the way that, like, it makes you think about death and the it was gross, too.
Yeah, and that's the thing. What was I talking about? My last podcast episode that I had, I was talking about a movie that, like, the movie itself isn't scary necessarily, but it's the idea and the concept of it. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. It had to do with Body Snatchers. I don't remember. It wasn't Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but it was the concept of like, oh, Stepford Wives. That's what it was.
Okay.
I was just talking about how the concept, like obviously the movie Stepford Wives is not terrifying, but like not being able to tell reality from like fiction and not being able to like advocate for yourself because like people think you're crazy or people are like, not the real you, this is the real you and it's actually a clone, like those ideas are scary. Thus the movie itself is scary in my opinion, even if I'm not jumping. I definitely get where you're coming from with that. And yeah, I do need to watch it. I really do. I just need to dedicate a day to just watch it.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't even think it's that long.
But I feel like the way that you're selling it, I'm going to have to give myself time to like reflect. Think it over and reflect and maybe like come down from that high.
Okay, I think so too.
Yeah, it just seems like that kind of
24 hours stint. Yeah.
Yeah. So with horror, there are various subgenres. Personally, as we all know, I am a Christmas horror stan. But Audrey, what subgenre do you think that you just absolutely could not live without?
Oh, wow. I didn't know that you were a Christmas horror fan, and I love that. I love that so much. Before I talk about what I like, I want to say okay, so how do you feel about, like, I think it's always so smart when scary things are holiday related, because then they're like, they can really fit for that holiday, and also they can market for that holiday.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good one.
No, yeah, I love holiday horror in general, to be honest. I really enjoy it, which is why, despite my personal feelings of Eli Roth, I was excited to see Thanksgiving, and I really enjoyed it, because I think it is one of those like pockets of horror that is not always something that production companies, you know, invest in. There will be a horror movie that comes around, like It's a Wonderful Knife, like that, and Thanksgiving. That's been our first Christmas horror movie since, what, Black Christmas 2006. Like, it's just, yeah. So I think it is really fun to see even just like Valentine's Day theme, like being able to watch a movie all, like a horror movie all year round, to have one for every holiday. Like that's a horror fan's dream.
I'm so there. I feel like the only thing that compares for people is rom-coms. Like, I think there's a rom-com for every holiday. And I think that's the only other genre we can really say holds a candle. I do think comedy, I think horror comedy is my favorite subgenre, though. I think I think it's because it's when it's done so well.
Yeah.
Usually, I don't know, I guess it kind of depends. it's hit or miss and aren't the best things in life that way, you know?
Well, and I think with horror comedy, that's what a lot of people, when they talk about, like, two genres that, I think, like, Jordan Peele said that his two favorite genres are horror and comedy because you're both aiming to get an emotional reaction. Yeah. With a romance movie, the goal isn't to make someone cry. Even with a drama, the goal isn't to make someone cry. But with comedy, it's successful if you've made someone laugh. With horror, it's successful if you've made someone scared in whatever way and capacity that is to that person. So for a horror comedy, I feel like any reaction to a horror comedy is a successful reaction because there are so many horror comedies that aren't received well. Like, they're received as if they're, like, bad movies, but it's like, at the end of the day, they're just camp. To me, they're just camp. You don't get it get it.
Yeah. I guess, you know what it is? It's like, it's the lowbrow of that horror always has in people's eyes. And then I think if you add something that feels a little bit cheap, like, as of a genre to some people, as comedy is, it's like, well, you took these two unlikable genres. And I think that in some people, like, cheapens the whole movie, but I think in a lot of ways it doesn't, and it enhances the movie when it's done correctly, obviously.
Yeah, and they're two very subjective genres too. Like, I struggle with watching comedies because I don't like a Amy Schumer comedy or like an Adam Sandler comedy. I mean, love Adam Sandler, but I don't always find those movies and those, like, that dialogue funny. Bottoms is a great comedy movie. But yeah, so it's like, I always struggle with comedy, and there are some people who struggle with horror because they're like, I'm not scared of that. So it's just very two subjective genres, but like you said, when they are put together, they're put together most times. So then that brings me to what, within that genre of horror comedy, within the last year or two, was there a movie that really stuck out to you? And then on the flip side of it, was there a movie outside of horror comedy within the last year or two that has also stuck out to you?
Yeah, it's so funny because, like, the second I said horror comedy, I was like, actually, I can't think of a single one that's come out recently. but then I did some thinking. And I thought about some and you know, when I say them, you're going to be like, oh, I forgot. But I guess it's because comedy is so, like, dry sometimes in horror movies. Anyway, Fresh. Did you see?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see Fresh? I loved Fresh when I first saw it. I remember, seeing it on Hulu and seeing all the ads for it in the subway and being like, okay, I guess this is a movie and Sebastian Stan is in it. And just, like, the way it starts out and, like, its whole, like that movie doesn't work without comedy, you know? Like, without the beginning, without, like, the – I guess it's a rom-com also. In some ways. But, yeah, that was a really good one. Nope. I loved Nope. How do you feel?
Yeah. No, I do love Nope. Okay. I mean – I don't have a very strong opinion because, you know, there are those Jordan Peele stands that are like, this movie is better than this movie this. I don't have strong opinions because I just support Jordan Peele's work in general. But I loved the just overall, like, the themes of Nope and Jean Jacket. Like, I was in that theater. I was like, I am a Jean Jacket stan. The way that she just put her whole Jean Jussie out for us to see was crazy. That was crazy. I was like, okay, we get it. Like, you are that girl. You can put it away now.
Truly. Scary. So scary. And so funny. Like, that was what was so wild. And I guess I think the funniness puts you at ease sometimes.
Yeah.
And gets you comfortable before the scares. And then it's not funny anymore.
And I think that's something that Jordan Peele is good at in terms of balancing it out, because I mean, you don't consider Nope, Get Out, or Us to be horror comedies, but the comedic moments are so perfectly timed. And like, it's not dry humor, but it's just like irony, or it's sarcasm, or it's something that's not like a direct punchline, which is why I think horror comedy is something that a lot of people struggle to enjoy or understand, because comedy isn't always just a punchline. So like with Nope and having those well-timed Nope, like that in itself, or like the music choices in Us, whenever the girl's like, Alexa, please call the police, and they play NWA instead, like those moments. And they do put you at ease right before something else goes wrong. But with Fresh, yeah, Fresh is one of those that if it were to be just a horror movie, I don't think that it would have gone over as well as it did. It was just so much irony in that one. And like, I loved that movie. Y'all, if you haven't checked out my podcast episode on Fresh, do that right now, because it's not one of my funniest episodes, but you will get some giggles. Talk about a horror comedy. Check it out.
Link in bio.
Link in bio. Click subscribe, please. And thank you. Now, with all of horror, not just horror comedy, but the entirety of horror, it is a little hard to try to pinpoint your first encounter with it, to try to, you know, date yourself back to that first moment where you were like, ooh, this is going to be my personality for the rest of my life. But if you can, what was your first encounter with horror, and what was it about horror that stuck out to you?
This is a great question, by the way. So I was always a Scooby-Doo, like, Goosebumps kid. Like, I was always intrigued by things that were, like, a little bit creepy, you know? But even, like, in the very, like, most minimal, like, gateway type ways. And so I think it was really apt that I do know my first scary movie, if you can consider it one, which I definitely think you can. Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah.
This is like a perfect scary movie to me. I mean, there it has problems. It has its problems, but it is so... I think it perfectly masters like everything that it's trying to do, and it sets up so much for the genre. That was my first scary movie. It was introduced to me by a family friend aunt type figure. is that coming from my end? I can't tell.
No, you're talking about the sirens.
Yeah. Oh well.
Yeah, that would be me.
No, I have really thin walls too, so it could be anywhere. And she was like, oh, she'd probably like this, and I saw that and I was like, more, I need more of this. And I feel like I think every horror fan that like you see in a documentary or any type of thing like that always talks about when they were younger and they would go to Blockbuster and they would see like the poster of the, or like the front cover of the scary movie, and they would get scared of it and they just like had to watch it, or they were like terrified of it or something. And my moment with that, I have two like very distinct moments of being a child not yet involved like in watching scary movies, but like seeing these movies like the fronts of them, the posters, yeah. and being like, I need this and I need to watch it. And they're actually mm-hmm. very strange. So it was Saw 2. I know. It was the poster that, like, so I was like 10 probably.
Okay.
It was the poster that has like the two fingers on the cover that mm-hmm. is actually like banned. And if, I feel like if you watch like YouTube videos that are like fun facts yeah. about this movie, it's like banned in a few countries. And I remember seeing that and being like, I need this. Like, I think I need yeah. to watch this right now. So I actually saw 2 before I saw the first one. Which is strange. And similarly, the other movie that I saw, it was the box set for the Chucky series, but it was Child's Play 2 and 3 and then Bride and Seed of Chucky, because those are the movies yeah. that, but not the first one, because obviously like Kushner owns it or whatever, like the other MGM yeah. owns it instead of like Universal or however the copyright yeah. went. But I don't know if you've ever seen this box set. I'll send it to you though. Oh, I have it. Wait.
I don't think I have. I don't think I've seen it.
Okay. This is very iconic to me. It's this. So it's like it's like him like in and he's got like all the I don't yeah. know, it's pretty silly, but I saw this and I was like, oh, must need. So I actually did yeah. see like the whole franchise before I saw the actually I knew that the first one wasn't in there, and I asked that family friend aunt for mm-hmm. the first one because she was like into scary movies, so she yeah. really helped me in this path. But yeah, that was a very long-winded answer to say Poltergeist at the end of the day, but...
Yeah, Poltergeist and Chucky and Saw 2.
Oh, yeah. Which, normal.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, Chucky was very influential in my childhood because of my aunt. Me and my aunt, like, we were the people who were always watching horror movies together between me, her, and my nana. And it's funny that you said you saw 2 before the first one, because to my recollection, I saw Halloween 6 before I saw the first, and I thought Halloween 6 was the first Halloween for the longest time.
So good. I can't even think about what the 6th one is.
It's The Curse of Michael Myers. Oh, it's where you're... Yeah.
I know which one it is. I guess...
Not the best one.
Is that the one with Paul Rudd?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But she, like, it's not the best one to a lot of people, but I love that one. Something about it. I really love it. Baby Paul Rudd. Hmm. So fall. So 90s.
Yeah.
And it genuinely... There is a scary factor to it.
Yes. It goes back to, like, the roots, even though it's, like, silly. I think it, like, mm-hmm. it comes back because after Resurrection, which I actually liked as a kid, which is really funny, no, it's, like, a terrible, terrible movie.
Yeah.
Halloween 5. But I think after that one, like, I think Halloween 6 is so refreshing.
Yeah. And... You know, every horror franchise has to have that one.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
just like, it's not the best, but it's the one I like.
Oh,
and that's
yeah,
all that matters. So, yeah, I can't say what my first encounter with horror was because I don't quite remember it. It's just like Halloween particularly played such an influential role. And Child's Play, because my aunt also really liked, she had The Bride of Chucky and The Seed of Chucky. And so we would watch those. Mm-hmm. No, like she had taste. She didn't like the last two Halloweens. And so we kind of bickered over that a little bit, but we've moved past it since then.
did she like the first one?
She
Halloween 2018.
She liked that one, I think, but she didn't like the way it ended because she is a Michael Myers stan, not a Laurie Strode stan. So that I think that's honestly what differentiates who liked the way it ended mm-hmm. and who didn't like the way it ended, which makes sense in my head.
Yeah, I feel like I don't have strong feelings. I'm like, I'll take any Michael Myers movie. Like, did I love the new ones? No. Did I hate them? No.
I'll still watch them.
Yeah. The fight scenes, they were incredible. Like, honestly, like, I really couldn't care for many a fight, like, action type scene. My brain literally, like, goes black. Like, I can't see anything. Like, I black out when action happens on the screen. But when he was doing it, I was paying attention. I was sad. Like,
yeah. Well, and honestly, I watched Halloween Ends. I think it was like near Halloween that I rewatched it for the first time since it came out. And I was like, this is something that I believe with all of these like different reboots and remakes and everything. Like, if it wasn't attached to a franchise that already has so much riding on it, it would be a phenomenal movie, which is how I feel about the new Exorcist. Mm-hmm. And I felt that way about Halloween Ends. Like, the movie itself, the narrative, the way that it's written, and like the vision for it was great. And I do think that, like, what people forget is the David Gordon Green version of Halloween does not include all of the middle stuff. Like, it's literally just, we pick up where Halloween 2 left off, like, right. Or not even Halloween 2 either, because that's where you learn that they're siblings. They're right. Not, they were never siblings ever meant to be. Yeah. So it's like, it makes sense that the town hates Laurie Strode. It makes sense that, well, not to me still, but it makes sense that, like, this is just a person that Laurie has no idea who it is. Like, this is just, he wrecked her entire teenage years. And he's just evil. And then the way that evil can morph and find new ways of wrecking havoc. And, you know, when evil lurks. Anyways, now we're gonna wrap up this, you know, horror history conversation a little bit, but as we close it out, we must talk about, there is a movie, a horror movie that, like, just sticks with you, right? Everyone has one where if you could, you would rewatch it and experience it for the first time all over again. And maybe there's a few in your head, but what would one of them be if you could experience it for the first time?
I thought about this for a long time. Final answer is Saw. That just sounds like an incredible rewatch.
Yeah.
I do feel like I saw Saw so young, and I was, like, so, like, into the franchise that I, like, don't even remember seeing the first one for the first time. Like, it was just one of those, like, movies that you, like, everybody knows Jigsaw, you know? Like, be able to, like, not only get the, like, twist at the end as it, with an adult brain who's, like, watching it and knows things about movies and how they should work and stuff.
Yeah.
But also, like, knowing, like, understanding the movie better would probably benefit me, like, as an adult. Like, we just, like, you don't, you know, you don't understand, like, the gravity of situations, I feel like, when you're a kid in the movie. Yeah, that movie's great.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that. I had that same thought as I was preparing to watch Saw 10. I was like, I have to, you know, do my whole rewatch of these. Because I honestly, I only watched, like, Saw 4 and Saw 5 when I was a kid, because that's just what was on the TV every time I turned it on. I always remembered those two, but I never remembered any of the other ones, especially the first one. I think I have more of a recollection of Scary Movie's version of Saw than I do the actual movie. But because the twist is so legendary, and because the way that they frame the narrative is just, like, all over the place, just being able to watch them in order as they were released and not having any of the Watch Mojo top 10 craziest twists to watch. Like, you know, that's, like, I've spoiled so many movies for myself just because I love Watch Mojo.
Dude, I'm there. I'm so there.
It's a bad habit. But yeah, that one. And then I would honestly say probably the last one where I had a visceral reaction to the ending particularly was probably Sleepaway Camp.
Like, because it's like, I keep talking.
Because the thing is that was another one that was spoiled for me because I watched Watch Mojo. But even though I knew it was coming, the way that it builds up is still just shocking. Like, It's still just a shocking image to be exposed to at the end of a film. And the fact that it freezes on that then it, like, becomes overexposed as the credits roll. Like, that ending is a really good ending.
Yeah, I'm there. Imagine you're, like, 10 and you're watching it on your, like, Disney princess pink Mickey Mouse TV because you're crazy. And it's just like it's midnight and we're not supposed to be watching it, and you like and it just like does that like searing ending with the volume on like a million. Oh my god, no, that
is this a personal experience of yours?
Oh, is it? yeah, definitely. No, because we just talked about this recently, and I'm not sad that the ending was ruined for you, but being like not knowing at all what you were getting into when watching that movie, and like watching it as a kid, like, was such a surreal experience. And I love Sleepaway Camp. Like, I'm a big Sleepaway Camp fan. I showed it to all my friends like freshman year of college. Like, it was just one of those things. And I always loved it. And I feel like, I guess cult movies have that like quality to them where you just like have to love them.
That, and you have to tell people. Like, if I was a missionary, I could be a missionary for horror movies. I think essentially that is what I am now that I think about it. I think I'm a missionary for the horror genre. because it's like when you find those movies that you just are so drawn to and so passionate about, and you have to show everyone. Like, you have to, if someone's like, what should we watch tonight? Oh, have you seen this movie? Because if not, that's what we're watching tonight.
Yeah.
That's how I am with, like, that's how I was with Sleepaway Camp, The Lost Boys. Oh. I have to show everyone The Lost Boys. Like,
it's no so question. Good.
Too good. All right. Well, we're going to start talking about your filmmaking now. That is what we came here to discuss after all. And before we talk about the short film that you recently just released, what sparked your passion for filmmaking, but particularly horror filmmaking? And is there a particular director or film that you see as the ultimate inspiration for your career in general?
Yeah. Okay, I got it. The first question. Okay. I you know, it's funny. I didn't like always want to be a filmmaker. I had a lot of like, I think when I was really young, I wanted to be a teacher, you know. I don't know. You pick up, that was my mom. My mom's a teacher, so I, you know, just pick up like I want to do what my mom did. And then I knew I wanted to do something in movies. Like, at some point I wanted to act, but then I made a YouTube channel when I was like 13, and I fell in love with editing. I love editing. Truly, I'm an editor at heart. But I also just love scary movies. Like, and I love to tell a good scary story. So it was just like I was a film major in college, film like studies. So I wasn't like production, and for. To get into college, I made like a short horror, and I guess it wasn't even intentional. Like, it was like, this is what I know. Like, this is what I'm good at. Like, or like, I guess it's more just like the thing that you know. Like, and I guess something that inspires me is like moments where I am afraid. Like, a lot of my movies that I've like made or written, they're like, they're all kind of inspired from a moment where I was like, oh my god, like in my real life where I was like, oh, I got the chills. Like, I'm, that thing scared me, even though it wasn't something that should have scared me, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was something that inspires me as like a horror filmmaker.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I definitely, which ask a question kind of like jumping from this one to a little later. And I'm very excited to hear the answer about that too. But I mean, as I am trying to branch out into my writing and do screenwriting, it's amazing just how much even non-horror things can, you can take something that's not supposed to be scary and create something horrifying from it. And I think that that is one of the, not to be a cliche, but one of the beauties of horror is like just the way that anything can truly be horrifying if the right person is is creating the story truly. I mean, look at Night Swim. Was it the best? No, but you know, a swimming pool.
No, I'm so there. No, it's the Stephen King of it all. Like it's, it's the taking something boring, like a hotel or a car, and making it scary, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow, what a genius. Now, your recent horror short film, which yours truly starred in. give us a little rundown of what Fever Dreamer is about.
Totally. Fever Dreamer is about a Brooklyn photographer who starts going crazy, going just mad after drinking some film developing chemicals that she mixes herself and uses. It's a fever dream. You know, it combines 35 millimeter black and white photography with like a very wide angle, like immersive sort of feeling, as you've got to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And it was so much fun to make. Truly.
Well, and you definitely, from everything that you had told me previously, you kind of branched out and technically you tried a lot of different things, such as like a head chopping. You know, you really sold that head chop too. That was, I know that was everyone's favorite part at the watch party, which it was so fun. You showed me your Letterboxd inspiration list for your short, and just looking at the list, like I could totally see your vision, which you even told me. I think I made a video about Peeping Tom, and you were like, oh yeah, that's one of the like inspirations for Fever Dreamer. And I said, whoa. And along with that, the other two films that stood out to me personally were Shudder 2008, which I was just talking about, and then 1 Hour Photo from 2002. That film, for everyone listening who hasn't seen it, 1 Hour Photo is about a film developer who grows an attachment to a family that he often works with. His delusion of this relationship draws him to spiral. R.I.P. Robin Williams, because this is starring him, and really all he wants is a loving familial connection at the end of the day. If you haven't seen Shudder from 2008, it is about a newlywed couple who moved to Japan for the husband's photography career. En route, they hit a woman in the middle of the road. What they believe to be a random paranormal circumstance becomes something much more personal. Let's just say male photographers are a walking red flag. And and last but not least, Peeping Tom from 1960. It isn't credited with being the first slasher, even though it technically is. And it's about a photographer with daddy issues and trauma who becomes obsessed with creating essentially his own horror film. And then a string of bodies follow him along the way. So tell us about the inspiration behind Fever Dreamer, and how did these three movies align with that vision you had?
Yes. Well, Fever Dreamer started from a place of real inspiration, of real life inspiration. I take black and like 35 millimeter black and white film photos just in my personal life, and I develop them at home, and I scan them at home in almost the exact same way that we see in Fever Dreamer. So it definitely came out of a place of like, ooh, this is like something that I do. We're supposed to write about things that we know. No.
Yeah.
It actually came from a place that all of my short films and a lot of things that I work on always like start with a scene. Mm-hmm. As I'm sure like for a lot of people, you just like, you feel something or you can think of a scene and you're like, oh, like there's a story to this scene.
Yeah.
This scene that was like this for me in Fever Dreamer, actually like I did not commit to film. Simply because I don't know how to do it. I actually think it would probably be better in a book format.
Oh.
Something you might know about. Book. because it – so let me explain. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. when I am like putting the film on the reels, mm-hmm. when I'm developing film – I have to be in the dark because I don't have one of those, like, they're like these big shirt bags that are like blackout that you can put your hand, just your hands in, and then like the film on the rolls so that the light doesn't get exposed to the negatives before you've developed them. But I don't have one of those, even though they're like $25, because I don't know. I guess I don't mind sitting in the dark for a prolonged period of time, but I actually do.
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm sitting with like the scissors and the big cylinder that I put the film in and all the film rolls and everything. And you have to do it fast too, because you don't mm-hmm. want to expose any light to it. So I would sit in, I actually had a walk-in closet in my last apartment, which is so bougie, and I'm so jealous. I do not have that anymore. So I would sit on the floor and I would close all the lights like on that floor of the apartment, and I'd be like, nobody can turn the lights on, and I'd like stuff a towel under the door to make sure no light got in, and I would sit on the floor of this room and just like put the film on the rolls. But at some point, because it's Brooklyn, we had a mouse, and so I was very scared of the mouse. Obviously, I'm not good with mice indoors. And whenever I had to do like put the film on the rolls, like during the time when the mouse was there, and then even after, I gave myself like so much trauma, and I was so scared while I was in the dark putting the film on the rolls, because I have to like feel for what I'm doing, and I had this like huge fear that I would just like put my hand down and be feeling for something, and I would like touch a mouse or like touch a hand. Like then my imagination started going crazy, right? And I was like, oh my God, this would make an amazing horror movie. But I didn't know how to do that in the dark. So it sort of formed out of that.
Yeah.
Somehow, some way. But it's something, you know, all of these three films, they all have something. They have a camera photo motif to them, and but it's all kind of different, which is interesting.
Right.
Like they all have like, they're all trying to say something different about photos. And Fever Dreamer, I think, was trying to like, Fever Dreamer was showing sort of obsession through photos, and. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about it more later, but just like the idea of wanting something so much that you sort of ruin what you're doing in the way, like on your path. But I, on those three films, it's very interesting because they all talk about photos, but they all talk about them in a different way.
Yeah.
So like, Peeping Tom uses photos to capture fear.
Mm-hmm.
Shudder uses photos to show you the truth and like what is actually going on in reality, with the complete opposite of One Hour Photo, which uses photos to like form a fabricated reality. So it's all very interesting, and like just the idea that like we use cameras as our eyes, like as an extension of ourselves. I wrote like an essay once about eyes in horror, and like that's when I saw Peeping Tom Peeping Tom for the first time after reading about it. First, of course, ruining it for myself. And then Men, Women, and Chainsaws, iconic book, seminal. And yeah, they're all beautiful movies. I mean, okay, not Shudder 2008, but the original, the Thai one, beautiful.
Yeah.
Good one. Shudder 2008 is like possibly like the ugliest and worst movie. It was one of those movies that my friend showed me, and she's not like super big into horror movies. She was like, oh, I saw this movie when I was a kid, and it's so good. And it was like one of those days where we like, it was a year ago, and we like put all like the blankets on the floor and like watched all the movies like from the floor. And that was one of them. So it's kind of fever dreamerish for me in a way.
Yeah.
In that aspect. But it's I feel like the original Shudder and Peeping Tom and 1 Hour Photo, they're all beautiful, like because they're about photography in some way, and they all like have like they all like play with color and light in such like a gorgeous way. In the same way that I feel like movies that are about music producers or things like that always have amazing soundtracks. Like it's kind of like given, like that the person that's doing that would have an eye or an ear for that thing. But were any of these movies like a first watch for you?
Well, I actually didn't get to watch 1 Hour Photo because
I think
I would too. And when I tried to find it, it was like rent on YouTube for $3.99. I said, oh, that's so unfortunate. Shudder, I had seen before a very long time ago because it was like I was halfway through it and then I remembered the ending. And I was like, yeah, I know what this is. And Peeping Tom, of course. I recently watched it. It was like, what, the summertime or something that I had watched it for the first time. And I mean, I knew about it because I had watched one of those, Shudder, like, series where it's like top 100 horror movies or one of those. And it was on there and I was like, oh my God, I want to watch this, especially because like you were talking about with color, it being a movie of the 1960s, it still has that Technicolor visual to it that is you don't often see with horror anymore. Like bright colored horror movies are just a special breed that I hold so dearly to my heart.
I'm with you.
But you know, with all three of these movies and just horror in general, whether we're talking about photography or not, voyeurism is something that I love, just like the movie, like what is it, The Voyeurs with Sydney Sweeney and Justice Smith, like something like that, or The Watcher with Micah Monroe. Those movies where it has to do with voyeurism and watching something or watching someone and fixating on that thing that you're watching is just a particular type of story. And I think it also is just the madness that comes with it. Like you become fixated to a point where you're drawn mad. And with Fever Dreamer, with Peeping Tom, not so much Shudder and not so much with 1 Hour Photo either, but like you have these artists who have this desire and they become fixated on this project that they want, similar to you have The House That Jack Built and then Sound of Violence. Those are the two movies that I always like talk about in terms of this concept, and they're so fixated on the end goal and it causes them to become just absolutely mad in the head. And it's like, you know, you achieved what you wanted, you did exactly what you wanted to do, but at what cost? And those are my favorite kinds of horror movies when it comes to this fixation and desire, which is what you had just talked about a little bit. And so the theme of desire and the dangers of having too much often find its way in horror. For the film Shudder, the topic of spirit photography is explored as a way for strong emotions to make themselves heard. How did desire play a role in your story, and why do you think it makes a great subject for a horror story?
Ah, it makes an amazing, it's a perfect sort of theme, I feel like, for a horror movie. The first time I was aware of the theme of, like, selling your soul to the devil for whatever it is that you want, and then having to reap the benefits and the cons to whatever that is.
Yeah.
Is in, I think, the place where it was done first, which is the like, story of Dr. Faustus, the book.
Yeah.
I had to read that in, like, sophomore year of high school. And you know, it's, you know, when you're a kid and you, like, learn something really dumb for the first time, you're like, like, my eyes are opened. That was one of those moments for me, I guess. And I always wanted to write something that had that theme, because I think that theme is so, it's so, it's easy to relate to in a way. Just like showing you, you know, showing you something that you can never have, like the camera in the store in Fever Dreamer. And, you know, there's all these right ways that you're supposed to do it. You know, you're supposed to just, you know, develop some people's film for whenever they want for a hit of their pen or $5 or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe if you prick your finger and drink the film chemicals, you can you can get everything that you want. You can get that camera, girl. But I don't know, it's something relatable, like the idea of a shortcut. The idea of like being so obsessed with like your art and like the success of your art that you could do something like that, you can put that success that you want sort of at consequence in the way, and just like you said, it's getting what you want but it not being what you wanted in the end, like,
yeah,
doesn't that just hit for everyone? Because, like, you know, everyone's going for something, and it could be something so small, and it's like, what if you regret it though?
I think, like, creatives being the focal point of these stories makes so much sense when trying to be a photographer, trying to be an artist, trying to be a music producer, any of these above things or anything else you can think of, like, they're all very hard to do. Like, you have to kind of pave your own way, unless you have a shortcut that is the form of a parent or an uncle or an aunt who has that connection. But like, if you're just a regular person, you don't have those shortcuts. But what if you were offered one in the form of sacrificing yourself or sacrificing someone, similar to Night Swim, where, well, we won't talk about the twist, but the twist has to do with that desire and what you have to sacrifice. And I, for Fever Dreamer specifically, the way that, you know, the main character has this desire, but also you never know if what's happening is real or not. And to be able to do that in under 15 minutes too is an achievement on its own. Like, I don't know, I think creating a short film is a tactful project in general, because you have to try to figure out, okay, how am I gonna communicate this and execute this under this amount of time? And so, like, whenever the main character has her fever dream, or maybe she doesn't have her fever dream, and she snaps the head off, you're like, did that really happen? Is this camera really here? How did that camera get here? What's happening? And every successful short film, at least that I've ever seen, not everything is answered. You hit the end credits and you're still like, okay, but like, I have to know more. And I think that's why so many short films have become feature films, is because there's so much more to dive into, like Lights Out. I mean, are they always the best? Maybe not. But they are like stories that you just get lost in. You have another horror short that's traveled the indie film festival circuit, and I don't doubt that you already have something new in the works, but with this one still so fresh under your belt, what part of making this film was your most memorable, and what was the most stressful, if you have a moment that was super, super stressful?
Oh, there are moments. it was amazing. Definitely the most memorable is the head pop. Come on. Like,
yeah,
that was so wild. And it took a lot of thinking, like, mm-hmm. honestly, like, just the, like, thinking, we were like, oh, you know, we took, Colette is the name of the actress that plays Jules, the head pop head. Her head will roll. And, you know, we were like, we'll put your sweater on Bailey and Bailey will stand behind you. And then we'll pop the head out. But we all have to, like, time it. And we took, you know, there were a lot of takes. That was not a one take. I can't lie to you. And just like, oh, no, we see you in that one. Oh, no, there are no VFX, though. I'll tell you. I'll sit here right now and I'll say that was all in camera.
It was.
CGI never.
We are a practical effects family here.
Oh yeah, it's so it's actually really funny. I worked VFX on someone else's short once, and they had me do like very few things. And one thing they had, like, they were having me like, oh, like cut out, like, I don't want to see the shoe in this shot, like cut it out, you know. It's like, oh
yeah.
And just like it was like in the middle of the scene, and it was like mask it out, and I was like, but we could just leave it. So yeah. It doesn't really affect the thing. So I don't know. That's so practical, baby. But practical. Yeah, that was so memorable. Yeah. Stressful, maybe. It would only have been stressful if we didn't plan ahead like we did. I will say it rained on our shoot day, the day that you were there. And I feel like that was a little bit stressful. Like, but I, you know, rain, we had to film that day.
There was no other day, but we made it work at the end of the day.
We were inside mostly.
We were, yeah. And I don't know. I feel like it raining then, but then like the other times when Pepper is outside, like, it's sunny, or at least like clear, not raining. So the difference in weather just adds. It just adds. Like, oh, yeah. Time is passing in this movie.
Right. It's a whole world. I'm world building with rain. Please.
Exactly. No, it's not in your control, but once again, taking claim.
It was pretty too. Like the way that the cars, like I was just recently looking at that. Yeah. I was like, okay, like, it doesn't look that bad.
No, not at all. And for just overall with your filmmaking, do you have a specific goal when it comes to, like, I guess what you want to be known for, just as like a woman filmmaker, being in an industry that I think it's becoming more and more open and uplifting of women filmmakers, but for so long it's been so male dominated. So do you have any sort of like goal for how you want to approach it and how you want to go down in history?
Ooh, herstory.
Herstory.
Honestly, no. I know that I want to tell interesting stories. I want to tell interesting stories that aren't just mine. I'm working, Bailey's got something coming.
That's right.
And I love working on other people's films. I've edited a bunch of other people's and worked some sort of VFX type job. And it is so rewarding to work with like other people and like share their ideas. As an only child, like sometimes that's hard for me, especially on my own work. Like it's very but anytime I get feedback or anytime someone like suggests anything, it's always so good. Like it's so mm-hmm. nice to not like be only in your brain sometimes. I like one goal that I have is for something that I make to play at the Nighthawk.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm such a Nighthawk baby. I love it there. I feel like if starter packs were still a thing, like the Nighthawk would be on my starter pack. I feel so good there. I love watching movies, not just horror movies. Movies make me feel good, even mm-hmm. when they make me feel bad. Yeah. And I would love to have something screened there. That would be so cool. That's my goal.
Yeah.
If it happens when I'm 50, it happens when I'm 50.
Well, but also, I mean, there's all kinds of film festivals that do that, like, shout out short films. So,
true.
Who's to say? But that being said, for this upcoming year, do you have anything new in the works?
I'm writing.
Okay.
I'd love to be like, I'm writing.
I'm like literally always writing, but never finishing anything.
I'm writing. I've got more coming. No, I am actually writing something that's quite different than my last few stuff. Like you said, I am always trying to do like a little bit something different, like just for learning. Like it always, you know, it's so cool to learn new stuff every time, right. Whether it's filming on a subway or filming on location or having a gimbal. Like, it's always, it's always a different thing. And this one is going to have lots and lots of practical effects, and it's going to be a sort of, like, absurd body horror comedy horror thing. I feel like my films are also serious.
Yeah.
Every time I finish, I'm like, "Oh, that was serious."
Yeah.
I want to do something that's fun and light.
Yeah. Super and weird. Fun and light. Yeah. Was there anything this most like this past year that you saw that has kind of sparked your inspiration for whether it's like the movie that you're referring to or just a project that you hope to work on in the future?
I mean, a lot of good stuff has come out recently. Well, you know what? I do want to say that, like, I do feel like we've had, like, a very good amount of range recently in horror movies.
Yeah.
Like, giant budget, tiny budget, indie, not indie, like, all words, all action, like,
yeah.
I feel like we've had, like, and I feel like I've seen even more international films than I ever have before.
I know.
Because of, you know, great programs like Shudder that, like, feature them, obviously. Not sponsored. Wish we were.
I wish. Shudder, please, I've been asking that's, so long.
Let me back this up. My overall goal is to be one of those people that, like, Shudder calls to,
yes, like,
be in one of their things and their that
and oh my god, like
horror, like, nerd and filmmaker. Wouldn't that be cute?
Horror, yeah. There's like,
that's my new
goal. Oh my gosh, what's her name? I want to say her name's like Rebecca Henry or something, but she's on all,
she's the girl. Yeah,
she is the girl. And it's like, she has, like, I'm pretty sure she has a PhD, maybe, but she's a podcast host. But it just, like, Tanana Rivdu, like, she has a PhD. And I'm like, I want to be you.
I want to be you so bad. I love her so much. I was going to take her online class a few years ago on like Blackness and Horror. It was so good. She taught it at, like, UCLA or something, but it was like, you could get the online course. I feel like she may have, like, made it available now, maybe.
Yeah,
but I don't know. She's amazing. I'm so there with you.
Like, oh, wow. Yeah, I, so what I'm writing, it's kind of under wraps to the listeners, but you know what, it's okay. I'll put it out there briefly. Nobody can steal my idea, though. But I want to say, like, the idea of what I'm writing kind of came from the same aspect of, like, you have this artist who has this feeling, this, like, very intense feeling, and it comes out in their art, and it's bloody and messy, and it's just, like, Yeah, and it's exactly how you were saying, whenever you write a scene, like it starts with a scene or something. So this started as a poem, and I saw just a David Lynch painting, and I was like, this is what I'm going to write based off of this painting. And then from there, I was like, the way that I wrote it in my head, it was just, I just saw a movie. And never have I tried to screenwrite before, but I was like, if no one's going to do it, I'm going to do it. If no one's going to think of this concept that I have in my brain, then I have to make the movie, essentially. And so, yeah, it's just kind of like, it's crazy how small of a seed an idea can start out, and then it eventually growing and becoming so much bigger. Well, that's all the questions I had for you. But you all listen, if you're in the New York tri-state area, Audrey's always looking for people to cast in her short films. Of course, she was just talking about how she has something that she's writing, you all. She's writing, and soon that will be filming and not writing. It'll be casting and then filming. So if you have aspirations for helping out on a short film, whatever it is, reach out to Audrey and, you know, get it shaken. That's exactly what I did. Literally, me and Audrey had never spoken before. We just followed each other on Instagram. And then she posted that she was looking for a cast for her short film. And I said, whatever you need me for, here's my information. and there we were. And now I'm film store girl.
Folks, it's that easy. Like, it
literally is that easy.
Yeah, and it was working with you was so fabulous. Like, it was so great. And I'm so excited to work with you again.
Oh my god, yeah.
On this. And also off the cuff, I do want to say that I never like got to say this to you, but the ending really reminded me of the ending of Pearl. If you saw that.
Of your script.
Mm-hmm. Like the way that comes home, or wherever the partner comes home.
Oh.
You know what I mean? And then she's just like kind of staring at, or, and then, you know, I don't know. So, something about it sort of reminded me of like the psychosis at the end with the meeting back up in an amazing way.
Yeah. No. I definitely did not have Pearl in my mind. Well, Pearl's always in my mind. But I was. It wasn't coming from that place when I was writing it, but I can totally see that. Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. And if I have to revise it, then maybe I'll dive a little bit deeper into it and take a little bit more inspiration from Pearl. Because that's essentially what it, like, I want that character to be in this state of psychosis where it's like, you're just driven by like absolute, like this intense urge and feeling that you have no thought going on in your head.
Van Gogh vibes, right?
Van Gogh vibes, yeah.
That was him.
Yeah. So if any of my listeners wanted to, I don't know, reach out to offer you help on your next short film, reach out to be the star of your next short film, or just to keep up with you because you do have films in the indie film circuit currently, where can they find you on the social medias?
I'm at Drop Dead Gorgeous Films on Instagram and AudreyLorber.com. Please reach out. Love to follow all my fave local indie bitches only. But it's so true. Like, that's how we met, and that's how, like, I've met so many other people just, like, in the area. Like, just going to their screenings of their short film and hearing what they have to say. And it's so cool because then, like, I'm part of this film festival that's actually showing at the Alamo in Winchester, Virginia.
Oh.
Crazy. And I know like a couple of films that are in the festival because I already like know the person because I met them through Instagram like in 2012 or something. But it's been so cool. Like the community, the horror community that I have found. that I have been welcomed and been a part of has been truly amazing. So
yeah, no, I absolutely love the horror community, and ever since moving to New York, really, I have just been able to meet so many people and see how great the horror community is. I think before I moved, I was just starting the podcast, or like starting it from the horror perspective. And so I wasn't really like super big into the community. I didn't know a lot of people. Yeah. And then I moved here, and it's just, there's so many different opportunities for not just like horror people, but just nerds in general to get together. And most times if you're in a general meeting of nerds, you're going to find the horror nerds somewhere.
They're lurking.
They are always lurking in the corner somewhere. But yeah, it was absolutely phenomenal to have you on the podcast. I'm so glad that we could talk about your short film. You all support Audrey, support your woman filmmakers, whether they're an indie filmmaker, foreign filmmaker, whether they like identify as a woman, no matter what, support them, because women's stories matter. And quite frankly, most times, the horror movies that are about women are not always written about women, and that's why they're not good. So, I'm just saying, we've talked about Last Night in Soho before, but I digress. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Substack at Your Horror Podcast. This is Your Horror Podcast, where you get all your fabulous horror needs. And yeah, I think that's all that I have for you all today. Like I said, thank you, Audrey. Thank you, listeners, for always tuning in and listening. And I hope to catch you next episode. Happy Women's History Month. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Your PhD in black cinema, Sister Soldier.
Listen, I read my Entertainment Weekly, okay? I know my shit.